Welcome to End Time Talk Radio, where the truth is usually stranger than fiction. The purpose of these shows are not to scare you, but to prepare you, because what you don't know could hurt you. The word says in Hosea 4:6, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." Thank you for joining us. My name is Julie, and here is the host of the show, Barry Meyer.
Welcome to End Time Talk Radio. We have a great show here tonight. Thank you for everyone for coming on tonight. We have Stan Dale. We'll be talking with numerous different items and issues that you need to know about, things that you maybe not heard of before. And a couple things I wanted to mention is that we're seeing a lot of things happen in the world. We're seeing earthquakes. We're seeing volcanoes. Matter of fact, on I think Saturday night, May 5th, we're going to see a supermoon. And so I don't know if that's going to affect anything on the earth or not. We'll maybe ask Stan on that. Also want to mention that over in Kansas, they're inserting human genes into rice now. And so we're seeing that happen. You know, one in seven thinks end of the world is coming. There's just so many things that are just happening out there. I definitely encourage you to go to Stan Dale's website at standale.com. Definitely check out what Holly's doing and see what's kind of going on. You know, she really spends a lot of time out there, and really, if you get a chance, even send her an email just saying, you know, thank you. You know, I really appreciate it. Now, Stan Dale, if you don't know who he is, he's been a computer programmer of mainframes in seven languages. Also a senior system analyst, research physicist, both formally and self-educated. I mean, Stan is just really a knowledgeable person. He's done so much in black projects, yeah, anti-gravity, so many different things. And, you know, but at the same time, Stan has a heart like a teddy bear. And Stan, I really appreciate you doing this show with us tonight.
Thank you, Barry. Nice to be here. Say hi to Julie for me.
I will. As a matter of fact, we're live, but we're also double live. I actually have a little radio transmitter, so she can listen on a separate radio. So I think she heard you.
Good.
Yeah, so we're expanding all the time here at End Time Talk Radio. And like I said, we got three computers and three recorders. So those who are listening, if anything happens with Ustream, we do have two backups going. So, and then Stan is also recording too. So we have multiple different ways of doing this. Stan, you know... you know, I know that people have heard you before. Maybe take a minute or two and just kind of maybe tell your background. We might have new listeners.
Well, okay. As you said, I've done research in a lot of things that are physics, modern physics, anti-gravity, and things like that. And cutting to the chase, in 1971, I was recruited by Dr. Edward Teller's Black Ops team to go down to Australia to finish my work on circular flying discs, or flying saucers, if you wish, to develop a plasma drive, and found out that they were already into anti-gravity and didn't need the plasma drives, but that was nice anyway to get to work with them. And we had a falling out after I'd been there a while in Melbourne, where I was stationed at that time. And I wanted to make certain things public about the technology they were hiding from the public, which is a lot of stuff. They didn't like that, and thought they would put me at the bottom of a mine shaft permanently. I did manage to escape them, run through the southern part of Australia, hooked up with some hippies in a van that had flowers and stuff, you know, like a combi van with flowers painted on the side of it. And I had my car, and between the three people in that and me and my car, we worked our way across Australia and through the Nullarbor Desert, which when it was sealed with the road and stuff, which was quite interesting. Ended up in Perth, Western Australia, and spent the rest of my 30 years in Australia there, trying to expose what was being covered up by the Illuminati guys that had hired me, as who it turned out to be. I mean, Dr. James R. Maxfield is the one that recruited me for Dr. Teller's group, and all those guys were part of the cotton top oldies that you know, had world plans on their desk. People here call them the Illuminati nowadays. And it led me to eventually come out on TV, and I was asked to participate in a UFO program, a documentary on Channel 9 there in Perth. And that led to writing a book, as sometimes these things do. So that's how I got that Cosmic Conspiracy book written. And after that, it's just been kind of hundreds and hundreds of lectures and TV shows and stuff to warn people about what was being done in the back room and why. I guess, is that enough?
Yeah, I think that does, because we can definitely have people go back to the interviews and check out what you had said before. One of the things I wanted to start off with was back in January of 2012, this year, at work, I was looking west in Cheyenne, and I noticed, now I'm Cheyenne, Wyoming here, and I noticed that there was quite a few chemtrails, and we'll talk about that too. But one thing I noticed between the two jets was a little white spear. And it was over, I would say, FE Warren Air Force Base, and it was probably maybe twice as high in the air. And if I would bet, at my best judge, I would say it was twice as far as it was as the jets were. So if the jets were here, then it was another, you know, distance from them and higher. Now, my best judgment was that maybe it could have been the size of one of those jets. Now, that being said, I had actually took a 7-foot fence post and watched it, and it did not move for 20 minutes. Of course, when I had to do a few other things, I noticed it was gone. And so are you hearing more of those things happen over Air Force bases and that?
Well, I don't get the reports that often. I know there are a number of websites and phone service centers that take the calls in and the reports. There are increasing sightings reportings, whether they're of stationary objects or not, I don't know. But, yeah, there's an increase in sightings all across the planet.
Well, that's
I think for a good reason. But anyway, go on.
No, that's okay. You know, I'm just hearing so many different things, so maybe I'll throw something else at you. There was a person that was working in the sheriff's department in Colorado, and I won't say where, but they had told me that there was a three-letter agency, person that had worked for the three-letter agency that was working now for the sheriff's department. So they had gone out of the federal government, now they're working for the sheriff's department. And out of the blue, they just basically gave their letter that they were quitting. For some reason, the sheriff's department had to get back in touch with him. They could not find him. They could not find his wife. They even knew that his kids were in Germany. They were gone too. Are you hearing things of people that work for the government now that are maybe what you call maybe bugging out?
I've heard rumors, nothing that I can verify, but yes, rumors. And certainly there have been things in mainstream about people dying that have been speaking out against the current administration. And mm-hmm. You know, Breitbart and stuff like that, but I don't know. I expect to see more of this as we get closer to the November elections,
sure.
If we ever have elections in November.
Yeah, I know. I had Lindsey Williams on last couple weeks back, and he talked about how we could see maybe him not getting back in. I don't know. It depends on what he said, those in the Illuminati, the elite.
Yes, I heard that. That is a possibility, because he is definitely going against the Illuminist plan. The thing I see about Obama is that he will say one thing publicly and do the opposite privately until it's known publicly. What he has said about Israel, like he said publicly to Netanyahu recently, look, hold off your attack on Iran until after the November elections, because, you know, then I can have complete control over everything, and I won't be distracted with elections and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But that was made public, you know, a leak to the public, right? What I see there is a possibility for Obama to have to be forced to back Israel, because Israel, go ahead, he knows Israel's got to make a preemptive strike on Iran. And on that issue, there are a number of the generals, apparently, and some of the people in the population of Israel that are against taking military action against Iran. So there's going to be an early election in Iran, probably in the fall, to try to oust Netanyahu from office. So that puts extra pressure on him. If he's going to make the invasion, the preemptive strike in any way on Iran, he's got to do it before he's kicked out of office.
Sure.
That being said, Obama probably knows that and will sit here, and then when Israel goes against Iran and America has to go to support Israel, you understand, reluctantly. And so Obama says, well, look, we've got to get into this because we have to back them. You know, we've got a defense treaty, and we will go over there to help them. At that point, we will be at threat in our own country by Al-Qaeda and various other terrorist organizations who have agents in place here in the United States, and bombs and things in our food chain, agents to catch our forests on fire, all kinds of people here. And they will start to become active, and so Obama will use that opportunity to say, well, look, guys, I didn't want this to happen. I asked Netanyahu to stop,
Sure.
Until after the election, which, of course, he can't really do. But then we're forced into this war position where we're at threat within our country by, you know, fifth columnist terrorists. So I'm going to have to declare martial law. And, well, look, as much as I hate to, we're going to have to put the elections off until I can handle this problem. That's the way I see it reading.
Sure. You know, we're going to get into earth changes. Before I get there, I want to mention one other thing. My wife was up there by Lander, Wyoming, up there where Jackson Hole area is. And when she was coming back home from a meeting, she actually ran across what we have talked about, and I've heard you talk about, those underground mining machines. It was so big that she had to pull over to kind of like let it pass. And this is on a two-lane road. This is not interstate or nothing like that. So is there something going on up there by Yellowstone, or I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering.
Well, there could be. I know that Yellowstone has geophysical problems that we're aware of that are being kind of held secret by the government. They've made all the USGS employees that are in the know and in that area sign non-disclosure and, you know, National Secrets Acts, that kind of stuff, threatening even the drivers that drive equipment in and out that aren't even USGS, you know, with imprisonment and fine if they tell what's going on. So the tunnel digging stuff could be something digging, perhaps radiating holes from Yellowstone to allow it to bleed off into magma pools rather than a big explosion. It may be another base in the area that's being connected. We have, I am certain, a lot of underground tunnels that are as big as 40 feet in diameter running throughout the United States. This, you know, the Germans pioneered that in World War II with all their underground bases and tunnels. We just picked it up. In fact, one of the biggest, nicest standard cutting and boring machines is made in Germany, and it's 42 feet in diameter. But what your wife Julie saw was probably more like a 25 to 30 foot diameter, one of the older types that the Air Force has used here for some time.
Yeah. Well, that was a few things I wanted to mention. That was about 2 years ago. Anyways, so now with earth changes, we're hearing, you know, sounds in the sky, earthquake, volcanoes, you know, multiple different things happening. Let's just start off with the sounds in the sky. What's causing this?
Boy, you got me. I can think of a number of issues that might be causing it, but nothing concrete. The noises in the sky can be due to changes in the density of the air suddenly by interacting waves from HARP-like stations. The United States has at least HARP, eight HARP facilities around the planet, but then Russia has some, China has some. And if they're all using them at the same time, or even if two of the three are using them at the same time, they generate what's called a beat pattern between them, where the waves reinforce at various places. Now, this can overheat the air and the water, if it's in the water, at that point and cause a loud explosion like a thunderclap would do, except a little bit more muffled, not as sharp as a thunderclap. Now, I haven't heard these booms, so I don't know if I would rate it as a kind of a muted air expansion and contraction thing from one of these standing wave nodes or not. That's one thought. The other thought might be that it's due to underground or tectonic plate movements or new fault line movements that are creating these sounds. Some of the people that have experienced them said they felt it was in the earth. Makes more sense in the New Madrid area, in the northern part of it anyway. And since our eastern United States, from the coast inland to the Mississippi, is pushing and buckling the plate of the whole United States right there in New Madrid, I suspect that eventually this will break and a massive earthquake will open up the Gulf of Mexico clear up to the Great Lakes, or at least almost there, if not totally there, because the New Madrid does have fault lines that run up close to that, to the bottom lake there. We have other problems occurring over in the northwest of the United States with earthquake potential.
How did you like the earthquake that was supposedly happening out here in southeast Wyoming here? What was it, a day or two ago?
You mean it did or did not happen?
Well, it didn't. I mean, the USGS, when you click on the link, it was like, oops, you must have got this link by mistake. I think Dutch Sense had it up there too. And they're like, well, they made a mistake because we didn't feel a 4.1 up here.
Well, I got the notice of the 4.1 from USGS. We have a live RSS feed from them. And almost a few minutes later, you know, like 5 minutes later, I got the, oh, sorry, that was a mistake. We withdrawn it. It didn't happen.
Yeah,
they thought it was a mining boom. I got to tell you, a Richter 4 mining boom is a lot of TNT.
Oh, I know.
I, I mean, we did the calculations once, and you'd have to have a heck of a lot of dynamite to make even 1.5 on the Richter scale.
Yeah.
So a 4.1, well, now that's interesting. Yeah. Maybe that was your tunnel machine falling in a hole or something. I don't know.
That could have been. Yeah, we didn't fill it out here in Cheyenne, so I don't know. Of course, you know, where I'm at work, you know, I'm in a cement building, so I would have thought I would have felt it.
No, 4.0 or 4.1, it's fairly fairly innocuous.
Really. Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be a Richter 5 before USGS can pick up an earthquake on the other side of the planet. So that gives you an idea. They can just barely detect a Richter 5. Richter 4, you might hear a little rumble or boom. And we're here in Pueblo, in the middle of Colorado, when they had the earthquakes, or when they do have them down at the border, southern border of Colorado, near Trinidad. You know, we might hear a sound or something like that. Some people said they did, but we were up at the time and didn't hear it either. So who knows? I mean, that was like, you know, a Richter 6 or so, a 5 or 6, and it we didn't feel it or notice it here. So I'm not surprised you didn't hear a 4.
Sure. Well, now talking about sounds, one thing I wanted to mention was in Los Alamos, New Mexico. I heard last month that a 10 Tesla had been shot into the ground, and it sounded like a whale underground. Did you hear anything about that?
No, I didn't. Holly and I have been through there a couple of years back at Los Alamos, interesting place. But mm-hmm. No, I hadn't heard anything about the 10 Tesla magnetic wave. Why would they do such a thing?
Well, I don't know. And the reason how I heard it was there was actually a guy named Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero up there in Portland, Oregon. I heard him talking about that, and he actually played this. It sounded like a whale sound. It almost sounded like if you were killing something, almost. It just sounded like it was hurting. That's the best way to explain it. But he said it was like 10 Teslas were shot into the ground. However that's explained, I don't know. But
Tesla is, you know, magnetic field strength.
Okay.
And so depending upon the wavelength of it, it could have been in the audible range for the whales, you know, whale song. But why they would do that, I don't know.
Sure.
That's weird.
Well, now I know HARP, don't they talk with underground and also with the submarines and that too, supposedly?
Well, HARP or HARP-like transceivers, yes. At Pine Gap in the center of Australia, they had and possibly still do have a base they're operating at to relay messages from the Middle East to the Defense Department here. But they also had a method of using a Tesla transformer to communicate with submarines. And the submarine could trail about a mile-long cable behind it underwater to receive these messages and at the same time recharge some of its batteries from the strength of the field that was hitting them. The HARP things are a different frequency range than, mm-hmm. than the low-frequency Tesla-type transmitters, but the Northwest Cape in West Australia also had a bunch of these that they were using in the old days. In fact, if you go into Google Earth and zoom in on the Northwest Peninsula up toward the end of it, you will see the mile across type antennas and the 13 poles and the spider web like wire where they're hooked between them, and you can still see them today. They buried a lot of it, turned it into under the sand there in the desert to hide it, but when they left it. But there are sites like this in Nevada as well that have been covered up. So
yeah, one of the things I find that's interesting is they got a major supercomputer out here west of Cheyenne. I'm not sure if it's the top, but it's one of the better computers they're building. And they have a big old, I don't know, liquid nitrogen tank next to it for cooling. I don't know. All I know is there's a huge tank, but they're, by saying that, you know, I'm hearing that, you know, multiple different, you know, U.S. government agencies are moving to Denver. We're seeing
to Utah.
Yeah, with Utah, and we heard the IRS is building it or increasing here in Cheyenne quite a number of people. It seems like they're gearing up for something. They know there's something that's going to happen.
Yeah, and you'll notice they're moving this direction toward Colorado from the West Coast and the East Coast. I think that Colorado, Wyoming, this area in here is going to be kind of the last bastion of defense of what's left of America, and I think the military will probably be in charge of it eventually. But the supercomputer you're talking about, usually it's a Cray type computer, but there are mm-hmm. newer developments, and they do have to be cooled. that could be something that they're hooking up to the Yellowstone data receivers as well, because it needs a supercomputer to handle the data. At the moment, they are piping the data from the Yellowstone seismometers and other devices they've put in down into Texas there to another computer mm-hmm. system. So I think they'll probably want one closer, and that might be why they're putting that in there.
Sure. I know we're kind of jumping around the page here, but one thing I also I just think it's great talking with you because, you know, we can just kind of just jump here and there. In the type of work that I do, I work with cryogenics. And if those who out there don't know, that's like liquid nitrogen, argon, and stuff like that. And I won't develop where I work at just because I have a little more leniency. But that being said, we've had people come through and fill up a nitrogen, and they've actually showed me the vats inside where they've been carrying, like, you know, let's say a virus or body parts. What doesn't say that they're transporting stuff that would go back underground? I don't know. I'm just kind of speculating.
Well, I don't know. I do feel from what we've seen moving down the highways here and other people reported that our area here is being targeted for moving a lot of government and military facilities here. I know they've been increasing the on-the-ground troops here at Fort Carson, just across the fence from us. And the Russians are coming into Colorado Springs this month to mm-hmm. For a week early to visit a baseball game. Right. And yeah. Then they're going to play war games after that in Denver. So, you know. I believe that, I got a bridge I can sell you if you believe
that's
that,
right.
too.
Yeah.
Oh, it's bad, isn't it? You got to laugh. It's just happening all around us so quickly.
I know.
Man-made stuff and then geophysics both.
We took our son down to Longmont, Colorado, not too far from where you're at, and we took him for his birthday skydiving. And on our way down, we noticed that there was a couple of vehicles, semis carrying some vehicles, like the tanks you'd see that are like six-wheeled. We've seen a couple of those going north. And then on our way back, I seen a Burlington Northern carrying just a multiple long, like you'd see the big truck with a big tank on the back for like water. I've seen like a long old train of that, like car after car after car. Like you're saying, there's many of those things happening.
There may be putting some last-minute supplies into various underground facilities. I'm pretty sure that we can go, or that our government and the military can go across the United States underground without ever being seen in a lot of these tunnels. I mean, if you take a 42-foot diameter tunnel that we know is public, you know, that kind of a drilling machine, those things can chew right through rock really fast. And if they use the nuclear one that was developed down there by one of the engineers at Los Alamos, that sucker will move like hot knife through butter and will melt the sides of the hole or the tunnel it's digging, so that you've got glass-lined tunnels once it's there. 42 feet in diameter means you could fly a little small saucer through there. You could put a rail through there and go by high-speed magnetic levitating rail clear across wherever that leads in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got a lot of them in Arizona and Nevada, Colorado.
Yeah.
So they're probably stocking up and getting ready for something. I grant you that.
That's just amazing. I don't know. Now let's go on to earthquakes, because we talked about the sounds. Do you think these earthquakes could be causing some of the sounds?
I do think so. I am watching the earthquakes rather closely here of late. Been trying to figure out a way to try to anticipate some of them, and some of the larger ones I've seen sort of a way to do it. I'm still playing with the figures to be sure that it's accurate before I make a public statement on it, but I have noticed, in spite of all the research, I have noticed an increase in earthquakes in strange places all over the planet. Just the sheer number of them that are being reported on USGS is quite interesting, and where they're occurring, in places that aren't normal, diverse places, as the Bible says.
Yeah.
Now, that, along the Pacific Arc of Fire, or Ring of Fire, as they commonly call it, it combined with volcanic activity, which is on the increase, does present a really, really big problem. Now, there's one super volcano other than Yellowstone down in Taupo, Lake Taupo, and the whole lake is a caldera mm-hmm. filled with water. That's been having earthquakes of significant magnitudes here in the last month. Now, that was a place I had a dream vision that walked me through that whole area. I mean, it was so real that when we got there to check it out, Holly and I, I could identify buildings and go inside them and walk down the hallways I'd never been there before and show, explain this is where such and such is going to happen when this Taupo erupts. Now, it's going to erupt in a funny way. First, the water is going to get really hot there, and I saw in the dream vision, and then it's going to subside. It's going to drop down because it will break underneath, and it will put a lot of that whole lake full of water, and some of the best trout fishing in the world is going to go down with it, down into a pool of magma that will be such an explosive reaction that it will blow away a third to a half of the North Island of New Zealand. And it's going to blow boulders for miles. That is something we're watching very closely. In another dream vision I had of the Northwest, the Cascades and all the way down to Mexico City, I saw between 6 and 8 volcanoes erupting all at the same time as the west coast west of the Cascades was starting to break and fall into the ocean. And these volcanoes were all erupting, putting ash and stuff out in the air. And I saw even Mexico City, Popocatépetl, was going as well. I think Iztaccíhuatl is another one down there it may go. But these are all things that are starting to become active now. Therefore, I think that Earth changes are beginning. And I had a dream vision the other night, just recently. Holly, did you put that up on our website, that dream vision about the clock? And the? Okay, yeah, it's somewhere on our site. I forget where we put it, but... The dream showed that we are at the end of the age of the Gentiles, and the age of the 7 years of Israel in the land has now started. So that means the judgments on the Gentile world are going to start flowing like storm water. It's coming in very quickly. I'm just checking here to see here. No, it's not there. It must be on our main page. Anyway, it's a strange thing. But I do believe that we are now starting very close to that 7-year period, which could be the Great Tribulation as well.
You know, in a way, it can be kind of scary because this is something that we've never seen before. But at the same time, it's not so scary because we know who we can trust in, which is Yahshua, Jesus Christ. You know, in your book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, was it page 200? Is it?
Yeah.
Now, that's where you actually invite someone to give their life to Yahshua at that time there.
Oh, in the book, it's page 127.
127, okay.
Yeah, 200 is the map of the United of the world, the 10 nations of the world that are going to occur when the new world order takes place.
Well, you know, I'd have the book in front of me, but we're moving, so we got everything packed up, so I don't have in front of me to look at it. You know, so and that's a story in itself. But you know, right now, what I'm hearing, Stan, is a lot of people that are hearing from God. They're moving to different places, and it's happening quickly. It's not like, you know, well, we'll wait a year and things will happen. Like for us, and just a quick example, we've been looking for 7 years. We just felt like we needed to move out of town, and we've been looking and looking and praying and believing, and nothing would ever open up. And of course, on Easter Sunday, we look at a place. We're like, we put a bid on it. They took it. We put our house up for sale. 2 weeks later, it sells. So we're moving. So,
well, you know, good luck to you. I mean, we'd like to have one of those kind of places too. But we're here in this exact house where Dream Vision led us when I lived in Australia. We'd never seen or heard of the place before, but certainly we are. You know. Trying to make plans here ourselves so that we're prepared to go by, you know, trailer and car to a new location, or even backpack it if we have to in an extreme emergency. But I don't think that we're going to be seeing a lot of people leave the country at the moment. It's probably just going to be too difficult.
Sure.
Maybe some to Canada and things like that. I don't know. But as far as Mexico and South America, that's off the deck because off the table because it's so. Corrupt with the gangs down there, that Americans would be fair game. So,
yeah.
How many murders every day? Oh, there's a lot of murders every day. Like, in the last couple of years, there have been thousands of murders. Of course, they're kidnapping for ransom various Americans because all Americans are rich, you understand.
Yeah.
That's the way they see it. But so we're left kind of with, okay, we're here, guys. Let's pull together wherever we can and where the Spirit leads us. And we're certainly... You know, saying to the Lord, well, if you want us to move, we did last time too, at a considerable expense, but we'll do it again if that's what you want. And so I'm glad that you guys have got a place anyway.
That's good. Hey, you're welcome to come up here, Stan.
Well, that's not too far, actually. That's certainly not closer than Canada.
Well, you know, and that being said, one of the things that really saddened my heart is we had walked into Walmart, and they had the greeters there. We seen a man, I don't know how old he was, and it's just a really kind person. And I told my wife, I said, you know, it broke my heart. I said, we got to take people in. We got to. I mean, Stan, we got to believe that God's going to elongate our food. I mean, you know, or in different things that, you know, we've done. You know, we got to believe that, because there's some people that are going to need help. And I understand that, you know, there'll be marauders out there too. But Stan, my heart just breaks for people out there, because one of the things that I'm seeing at work is more and more people that are going on oxygen. And I'm like, Stan, what are these people going to do? When
I know. We know something like that here in Colorado as well. And I just don't have an easy answer for that. There are some machines that will, like, make oxygen, but you need power for that. And the kind of power you need is not going to be in a portable solar array or something. It's got to be in something else, which obviously I'm looking at. But we haven't found it yet. But
Well, anyways, it just breaks my heart. That being said, my wife wanted to ask you, you know, what are some ways that people should take in priority in preparing? What are some things that you would recommend?
Well, gosh.
Well, it's a big word, isn't it? Well,
it is. It depends on your circumstance, but certainly the highest priority would be in a place that is out of the major cities. There are 120 of them in the United States, away from there and away from them as far as one tank of gas, so that people would have a lot of trouble getting out to you and back unless they had plenty of gasoline.
Yeah.
The other thing is to get out of the West Coast from the – like Utah, Nevada, get out of there, get over into the Rockies, and preferably on the eastern side. Eastern states, you know, New England states, they're all going to be in real hurt when things start to happen over there. Rioting, gangs, people trying to steal food, shoot each other for resources.
Sure.
That's part of the major cities thing, but the East Coast is also subject to earthquakes, and we've been seeing a number of smaller ones out offshore in the northeastern United States, which could be indicative of something else forming. The great kind of collapse over in the Canaries of the volcanic sides to, what's it called, El Viejo? Is that what they call that one? Cumbre Vieja, yeah.
Okay.
And that would produce a tidal wave that would be several hundred feet high. And, well, they say from 1,000 to several hundred feet high, the estimates vary. In fact, you know, you get experts on both sides to say it could happen, it won't happen, it may happen, it will happen. And the thing is, there's going to be a 600-mile-an-hour wave heading toward the coast of the United States. The brunt of it will probably hit in about 8 hours, and it would hit Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, and all up into the New England states. Now, you know from experience, if you have an evacuation notice for a hurricane 2 days ahead of time, people clear all the grocery shelves of everything, including, you know, spinach and stuff that's not exactly the tastiest of foods, but they panic, and the roads are clogged. And in Houston, we saw when they were trying to get away from the hurricane down there that they blocked the freeways, people's cars stopped and pulled off the side of the road, people hit each other, yelled and whatever, and pushed cars off the road, and they were in gridlock, couldn't get out of town because they were depending on the roads to be open.
Sure.
Wow. So my advice is, first, get out of the major cities.
Yeah, I'm looking at your map right now of the United States, where it shows all the water that would encapsulate the land areas. That's quite a bit.
Yes. Now you're looking at the hold on.
And I actually have that live up for people to see.
Okay, good. All right. Let me just have a quick join with you here on that map page. I've got other maps other than that that I'm working on, show different levels of inundation of sea level that could occur because of various activities.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be, like, you know, the collapse of the Gulf of Mexico, where, you know, all the drilling has been doing, where the domes may collapse. But anyway, whatever the cause, on the eastern side of the map, from the tip of Texas over up into the New England states, that blue area is a sea level rise of 215 feet. Now, over on the left side of the map, it's a much more drastic sea level change. And I'll explain why I put that there in a minute. But on the eastern side, if you look at how many people live in the blue areas where we could have a 215-foot sea level rise from the melting of the ice caps and various other activities on the planet, including internal pressures on the planet, which can force water up out of what's called the Moho discontinuity, which is a salty seawater that's in a shell underneath the surface of the Earth about 15 miles down. This was even reported in the Bible record of the flood about hot water coming up. If that comes up, if the planet does expand, or its core does expand to put pressure on the Moho Ravage discontinuity, that shell, then this sea level rise could be sudden. And that affects a lot of our oil production. That affects a lot of commerce and trade. It goes across the Mississippi. It disappears for it. And it's just people in Australia, the government's already been advising people not to buy property on the coastal regions because of coastal inundation over a period of time. They know it's coming.
And how is it that our government isn't telling people?
You know, we used to laugh down in Australia about the American press because they only tell you what they wanted to tell you and, you know, mamby-pamby and sugarcoat it. Down there, we got the real news. And now with the internet, we get the real news all over the planet. But, you know, there's this funny mindset in control of our press here. Keep them kind of, you know, fed and dumb and ignorant and of what's going on, and we can control them. Otherwise, we'll have chaos on our hands. And I think that's why they hold it back.
My gosh, you know, Stan, if I tell somebody, hey, did you see this? And like, well, where'd you get that from? I said, well, the place you're not looking. people are so unbelieving in anything that you say about this stuff.
I know.
And I've gotten to the point where I just don't tell people anymore unless they ask me, because it's just blew in the face.
Yes. Well, now, if you want to tell them something even more unbelievable, look at the left side of the map.
Yeah.
Now, the Hopi told us that they're going to go by canoe between their mesas, the three mesas. And you can see that little yellow circle, which is around those three mesas.
Yes.
And that yellow circle in the middle of it, you can see three lines. Those are the mesas where the three different divisions of the Hopi live. Now, for that to happen as a water intrusion from the ocean, that area would have to drop over a mile. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that that will happen. It might certainly happen when the coast goes. But there's another way that prophecy could be fulfilled for them. And that is if that area, just to the left of that little yellow circle at the top, you can just see a part of the river there, the Colorado River thing, I think it is.
Okay.
You can just see that. And that river there is, you can block it just with a rock fall where that river bends. And I ran the sums. If you block it with a rock fall, it will gradually fill up the whole area there and up into Colorado. Mm-hmm. With lake water. But by doing the sums of the river flows and stuff, it looks like it would take 20 to 25 years for that to happen, unless something drastic occurs to cause more water. So I don't know whether it's local water, you know, from a blocked river backing up, or whether it's something catastrophic that drops that area down. Mm-hmm. I know that area where that white arrow goes up to the yellow circle, you'll see it going through the southwest corner of Arizona there and into California. That whole area there where it's that light blue is very unstable seismologically. And there may be something happening under there that will just drop it all down into a void, and, you know, it'll be seafront property up there on the mesas or in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, Stan, one of the things I heard you talk on, I believe you mentioned on a radio show beforehand, was that Phoenix, if that water reservoir underneath them, the aqueduct, goes dry, they have a possibility of collapsing.
Yeah, and there's still people moving in there.
Wow, amazing. You know, and our good friend L.A. Marzulli is out there in California, too, still.
Yeah, I don't know why he does that.
Yeah,
but we talk about it. I just talked to him the other day about it, and I guess that's where all of his production and people are. But we have discussed with him about bringing it up to Denver, perhaps, where we've got studio production facilities there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and one of the things that up here in Wyoming, we had a we have a new we have Governor Matt Mead, but there was a one guy that was running for governorship at our elections, and his name was Taylor Haynes, and he was actually a Christian, and he was actually saying, "Hey, you know, we're not doing this stuff. The federal government." I mean, he was. People were just voting. We're going to vote for him, but he came out too late for people to quite get knew who he was. But he lives outside of somewhere in the state. He lives got a big old ranch, and he's kind of doing like other people are doing. They're just getting out of town. They're being, you know, more self-sufficient, you know. And one of the things I hear a lot is people are just arming to the hilt. I mean, they just have guns left and right.
Yeah, I know. We're doing the same up here, everybody. Where we live, that we've got a bunch of retired veterans from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, everything here. I can just look out my window here and see, see ex-Navy nuclear submarine. I can see Special Forces over here, and then over there is Army. And, you know, we're doing the same thing.
Sure.
Because it's going to get heavy out there.
Yeah, we got some military guys that are doing the same thing. They're kind of under the radar. You don't hear a whole lot. You hear things from people, and you hear like, hey, this guy's got a 1,000-gallon propane tank underground, or this guy's got this, or this guy's got that. You hear stuff, and you really don't pass it on to somebody that you don't trust. You just kind of keep it to yourself that you know these things are happening.
Right, right. Well, yeah, and that's kind of the best way, because you know, if you broadcast what you're doing, what they say in the World War II, loose lips sink ships.
That's right.
And we don't want everybody to know what we're doing, where we are.
Yeah.
And that's a good policy. If you're going to do something, do it quietly nowadays. It's I don't know why people would go on these prepper shows on the History Channel or whatever.
Oh, I know.
This is so
I know. You know, but they give you some good ideas, though. They're like, oh, you know, we could do that. That's a good idea. You know, they do different things. It gives you ideas.
Yeah. Well, I hope they move on and get out of wherever they are, because they've certainly put a finger on themselves.
I know. Well, I think one lady, she was in Salt Lake at the Capitol right there. She said, oh, there's a Capitol out my window. And she says, oh, I got all this food. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, and it's right there by our window. Someone just break the window and grab everything and go.
Yeah, she was in an apartment or something, wasn't she?
Yeah. There was an ingenious idea that these guys actually had were taking newspaper and leaves, and they were crushing it together in water. And then they would let them dry, and they had like 6,000 of them where they could last them like 3 months to burn to keep them warm.
Yeah, I saw that. There are some good ideas there. Certainly that kind of stuff, good ideas would be great, but you know, showing everybody basically what you've got and where you are is just – I don't know why anyone would submit to that, but they did.
Yeah, and then some of them are just ridiculous. I mean, it's like I don't think that'll ever happen, but
– yeah.
Anyways, moving on. You know, Stan, with these things that are happening, I know that people can kind of get scared, but I wanted to mention that your wife wrote a book called Dare to Prepare. And,
right.
You know, there's 600 pages. Matter of fact, I sat through, I think I bought it a couple years ago, and I read every single page. I mean, just going through
wow.
the whole thing. And it wasn't so much like I'll remember it all, but I have the reference. Only because, you know, like, okay, like let's say with soap, you know, I know how I can make soap, or one of the things was idea that you had in there with making your own silver, where
right.
you and one thing we found out worked out really well for us is I had an you know how sometimes you get a corn like a popcorn kernel up in your gum and it kind of gets infected,
yeah,
and it just didn't seem like it was healing, and my wife and I had heard somewhere that using they call it living clay, bentonite clay, and put it on there, and that would help suck out any infection.
Yeah.
And son of a gun, I tell you, 3 days later, I felt like I didn't have to go to a dentist or nothing. And someone else I knew had like a problem with their tooth where they had they had to drill up there. But 3 days later of using that stuff, it took it all out. And a matter of fact, I think it's been said to even take gangrene out of your foot in that.
Well, that's what mythical or mystical poultices were that the Aborigines and the Indians used to put on wounds. They would put mud, but it was bentonite type clay mud, because it would do just that. It would pull the infection out. Another treatment in combination with that is to use fresh honey.
Yes.
The honey that is the strongest honey I've seen is from New Zealand, called Melaleuca honey, which is they've now marketed as Medi honey, M-E-D-I honey. And I've used that stuff on a suture wound after surgery that didn't heal, and it wasn't healing with the normal antibiotics and stuff. And I put a dab, like a double matchhead mount worth on and in the wound and taped it up. The next day, it was already starting to heal. And 3 days later, it was okay to take the thing and forget it. It was healed.
Sure.
So natural honey has a bit of ozone in it. Not ozone. What do you call it? Peroxide.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of the healing process. The clay pulls stuff out, and it might be a combination of the clay wet with some honey and then applied to the wound area and bandaged up if you can do it. Of course, in the mouth you can't, but
sure.
That might be a wound treatment that could be widely used when the time comes, if we have bees and honey left. I'm not sure.
They're saying colony collapse is now happening in Wyoming. I know that we have some beekeepers up here. I haven't heard personally from them, but I remember seeing in the paper they're talking about it. If that keeps happening, Stan, and people cannot keep the populations of the bees, we're looking at a problem where the food will not be there like it always has been.
I know. And this will happen for a number of things, because the food is being infected with like Listeria and all kinds of stuff that's appearing in our garden crops, and the meat's being infected. These are, I think, purposeful attacks. The radiation is polluting the Pacific. Mm-hmm. A lot of the seafood that people are eating is now going to have to either be inspected, or you're going to eat radiation and absorb food. I mean, like shellfish, like oysters and shrimp and lobsters and crab, they pick up what's on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And they're already detecting it up in Alaska from the Fukushima event. And, we've got tarballs down in the Gulf Coast, which is they're being consumed by fish as well. And I'd hate to open up a fish and find a big chunk of tar in it, like some have been finding it in their oysters and their shrimp.
Yeah.
You've got that's impacting our food chain. The kelp in the Pacific we've already detected kelp that is radioactive from the Fukushima event over in the California waters, and of course the fish out there are eating that, and then of course we eat that if we eat fish.
Mm-hmm.
So our food chain is being impacted heavily right now. This is not someday. This is right now, and you need to prepare. And this is just, kind of man-made disasters, but then you've got like floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, that kind of stuff, which are impacting our food chain. There's a huge drought in progress right now. We're on the edge of it, but fortunately our crops are growing here. I mean, our orchard, all the trees are just full of fruit at the moment. Mm-hmm. But we're on the edge of the drought, not the center of it, going down into Texas and eastward.
Sure.
And down into Florida. So, the people are going to realize this when their food prices go up, and when foods start disappearing off the shelves, as they already are in some of the like Walmart, some of the bigger chains and stuff like that, the food's just not there anymore. So you've read the book. I mean, it's not alarmist. It's trying to tell you practically you do before the rush starts, and the rush is starting.
Yeah, and one of the things that's happening up here with some people that I've been talking to is they're buying the heirloom seeds, and what they're doing is they'll say, okay, I bought this bag of heirloom seeds, and I bought a bag for you. You plant this in your yard, I'll plant this in my yard, and let's say we're 10 miles apart. If you get hailed out, then you share your seeds with me. If I get hailed out, vice versa. I'm seeing that happen with people. Are you getting that down there too?
Don't know that we've seen that. It's a good idea. Holly does approach that when she's talking about people who dwell in apartment houses to find a piece of property somewhere and share crop it. Again, in the major cities, if that's where you live in an apartment, it's going to be hard to protect that and to keep looters out of it. You can grow in window boxes and stuff in an apartment for a certain amount of time, but there's not a lot you can grow in there. In the final analysis, people need to get out of the cities or face the consequences, which is going to be starvation and disease and chaos, anarchy.
Yeah. I often said that, hey, we live in Cheyenne. I go get an antelope, and the only problem is I come back, like 10 other people want the same thing I just got. So, I think living outside of town is going to be a good idea. One thing that I see in town that I've always kept my eye on is, and it may not be the cleanest, but I tell you what, it sure help you not being hungry, is we just got tons of rabbits up here. I mean, you could probably catch 10 of them and then breed them. I mean, they're just multiplying like crazy around here. I know that they get fleas and stuff like that, but I guess if you're hungry, anything works.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful of tularemia, though.
What's that?
The rabbits. Well, it's a rabbit disease here in Colorado, and it'll make you sick. It's not going to kill you, but it's. I suppose in its worst case, it could, but it makes you quite sick. And they suggest here, if you're going to get rabbits free of tularemia, to get them in midwinter and then lock them up and breed them and be sure that no other rabbits can get in there and affect them. And then you could do that. We have our fair share of rabbits that come by here. I've buried about 25 of them out the back. But
really? Okay.
Well, because they're a nuisance. They eat our crops and stuff.
Sure.
Big holes. But anyway, yeah, you could do that. But to get the winter rabbits midwinter, which will be free of the tularemia. I mean, they posted a sign on our next door neighbors warning tularemia because they found a dead tularemic rabbit there. Uh-huh. Just died of its own accord. You never want to eat an animal that's died by itself for some reason without
it
being.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No. Full of stuff.
When I was listening to you in Holly on the Mega Man show here a few weeks back, one of the things that you guys had talked about, you know, deer, and, you know, they might have, what was it called, whirling disease?
Yep.
And so how would you find out that certain animals would have things? You don't really know, do you?
Well, you don't. And the whirling diseases are like the mad cow disease. Whirling disease is in the fish. I misspoke when I said for the deer and antelope stuff.
Okay.
The equivalent of it is the falling disease, falling down disease, where they just can't stand up and they fall.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to watch the herd to know that. I mean, it's just
sure.
That they call that BSE, but.
Well, I'm thinking if I'm watching the herd, probably 10 other guys watching the same thing I'm looking at. So, yeah. You know, one of the guys I had talked to years back, and he told me this. He said that with everything falling apart, and he told me this, like, I think back in 2000 when they had Y2K. And his idea was that he would just stay put where he's at and just wait out for 3 or 4 months. And then if he felt led to go south, then he would put his fuel on his tanks or, you know, the fuel tanks on bed of trucks and stuff and then go south where it's warmer. The idea that he was waiting out is that when this does come down, we're going to see a lot of fighting, killing, infighting, different things happening. Are people talking like maybe waiting and then moving somewhere? Have you heard that?
Well, they may be talking that way. I haven't heard it from any people that were being clever about this, because if you go along the roads, the main roads, you're going to be subject to roadblocks and attack by looters.
Sure.
The clever thing, if you're going to move like that, is to have some fence cutters so you can cut through range fence in an SUV so that you can, if you're pulling a trailer, like he's talking about, to have that shock absorbers and things and never go flat tires, and then head on across overland. But between where you are and where you're going to be, you need to have the USGS maps that show old trails and hiking trails and, you know, areas in forests where you've got water and stuff like that, because you're going to have to make your own road. It'll be like the old West. You just can't depend on going on the main highways.
Yeah. One of the things my wife and I, we've tried to do is, you know, walk at night, you know, maybe 2 or 3 miles every night. And we haven't done it for a while with the moving stuff. But the idea is just to have ourselves up, because you can move, 3 to 4 miles in an hour, right?
You can, yeah. That's not too hard to do. And, you know, certainly walking at night is preferred, you know, to be detected. You'd have to have heat equipment, infrared heat equipment. People have to be scouring where you're going. So you obviously choose areas where it's low population, where people wouldn't be likely using night vision stuff to pick you off. And it's easier to walk at night in some respects, because it's cooler and you're having to exert a lot of energy. But yeah, I mean, you know, 6 miles an hour for, that's a brisk walk, for 4 or 5 hours, you're going to have to stop and rest. But, I mean, you know, you could make 20, 25 miles in a day easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, one of the things I wanted to touch on was that because we're seeing more UFOs, the aliens, the fallen angels, you know, are we going to start seeing more creatures start showing up? Are we going to start seeing more humanoid type animals or people showing up here soon? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, look at the White House.
Yeah. That's good.
Seriously, though. Yeah, I think we are going to see these things happen. And I think they will be coming this year and next year in greater numbers. The false flag or the real flag, alien, quote-unquote, invasion by friendly aliens who get rid of the grays that have been afflicting us for half a century. This, I expect, to be the wild card that is played by the new world leader as he takes control of the planet, using the friendship of these fallen ones, Satan and his followers, who are going to be posing as our creators and friendly neighbors, you know, guys from, I don't know, near star system, you know, the Pleiades or whatever they'll say, but this will be a lie. And that's the great deception, I think, that is spoken of in Matthew. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I expect that we'll be seeing that fairly soon. It has to come at a point where the people of the world are ready to throw away their governments because they don't trust them, at a point where they're frightened to death of nuclear war because they see it coming immediately, and they're frightened to death because the world economy has failed them and they're losing their homes and jobs. The food chain is being impacted, so they're getting hungry, even in the civilized or quote-unquote civilized developed countries. All these things are, and the earthquakes and volcanoes and strange weather, super cyclones, lightning storms, tornadoes in areas where they haven't been before, tornado alleys moved, and that kind of stuff. All these things, when people are about to just cut their wrists and saying, can no one solve these problems? And in rides, you know, the alien card, the V arrival of the visitors, right?
Yes.
And it the scene plays out. I mean, that series that they did on the visitors, a movie primarily, was absolutely sterling. It was written right along the lines of the Book of the Revelation, but thinly disguised as that, to show people how we would react, how some would go with them, how some wouldn't, you know, partake of the alien deception. It was the best, I think, method I've ever seen of getting the message out to the unsaved world in a manner that they would have it in the back of their brain when it happens to have to think about it.
Yeah. Well, I know that people are definitely more open to the UFOs than they are to the Bible. And a matter of fact, I wanted to ask you about that. You had to get, you just gave out some Bibles here, what was it, last month? How did that go over?
Oh, very well. We had hundreds of people writing in to enter the contest, and I was quite surprised that we did the first, the second time we had about 700 people show, you know, ask for free Bibles, and some of them gave us stories about, you know, why they wanted them, and that did influence the random drawing. But I was surprised to see that when we did a random drawing that some of the people that really needed the Bible had never had one. Were the ones that the random selector chose, and it was just a program we use on Excel that generates random numbers out of those 700. There were more people then than the 300 that applied for the contest, I think, in November last year when we did it. So it does tell you that there is a hunger for the Word.
And
we thought that the Jack Van Impe Bibles would probably be the best that we'd seen as far as the highlights in it for, you know, things that relate to prophecy and current events and salvation. You know, how you can do it. And the cosmic conspiracy, of course. I have, as you mentioned, the steps in from page about 120 through the end of that section where you sign it at page 127 explains how, why, and method, you know, and you can just follow along with what it tells you there in the book. And at the end, sign your name, declare your position with the Lord, and you're saved. And there have been so many reports back of people doing that from that book that we are astounded. I just, you know, that book is, what, 1978 when I first put the first edition out. It's now 50% bigger, and we're not going to put any more editions out of it. But this is the final edition, the 2010 edition. It's out now because the last warning I put in there was, you know, to be the one about the alien deception that we found the warnings of, the details of, in the book of Daniel. Makes quite an interesting. In fact, if you go to the related images page,
Okay, I'll go there.
Let's see, related images. Where did I put it here? I've got, yeah, okay, and click on the picture of the cosmic conspiracy in the top right inside there.
Send me back up one. Okay, let's see. Okay.
And if you see that page, there's a lower right hand, you know, the second column on the right, there's a page out of the cosmic conspiracy there about this 2010 warning about.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It just shows you the detail it went into in translating just 8 verses out of the book of Daniel. And there's a whole chapter on this, but I show the Hebrew with the vowels so that you know exactly what we're translating, and references to how I was able to translate certain parts of it by using Sumerian, a couple of Sumerian words, and some code that Daniel put in there, some still unsolved code that I'm working on about the 3 words, al, kal, al, which Daniel wrote when he was saying, and he shall place himself above God, the desire of women, and all other gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important phrase to translate, but the letters that are used, the 3 words, they're each 2 letters long, and they all start, those 3 letters, with Lamed, which is L, the snake letter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a snake's head with a tail. And it was like, in Jewish mysticism, it's like the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of wisdom, if you wish. And I find that just using those 3 words of 2 letters each to say that he'll do according to his will and exalt himself, magnify himself above every god, and above every god is Al-Kal-El. That is the sign of Satan, Lamed, Lamed, Lamed. It's just, yeah, anyway. When I say it begins with Lamed, it's the Lamed is the 2nd letter, but there is a code there, and I'm still working on that. But I put out what I had so far with the 3 Lameds, because mm-hmm. it's like the dark trinity, Satan's imposter thing, you know, with the passing of knowledge to mankind that he was not supposed to have at that time. Anyway, it's quite interesting. Yeah, it's all in the book there, and that gives you a sample out of the page to show you the detail that I go to there. And about the alien invasion, showed the big saucers, and I've talked about that in a number of interviews about the saucer that's a mile wide over your city. That impresses people.
Yeah.
It impresses engineers and physicists who say, you can't do it. And I say to them, okay, guys, if you made a dirigible that big and filled it with hydrogen, would it float up over your city? Yeah. What if you could make a dirigible that instead of having material around it, had a force field, you know, of circulating charge that held the energy in and made the craft lighter?
Oh,
yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But because they haven't been taught that in school or even to think laterally like that, they're going to be astounded when they see this and say, well, that can't be from around here. That's just, wow.
That would be amazing to see that. Well, I mean, just for me to see that little blip up in the sky that was white, just sitting there for, I'd say, 20 minutes, that was pretty amazing. I mean, it did not move. You know, something that big, a mile wide, that would get some people's attention.
Yeah, like the Phoenix Lights, you know, a few years back, that big mile-wide thing that drifted over Phoenix. Look, there are so many ways to do that kind of stuff, even if it's not real technology. I mean, I know Earth-made technology, man-made technology that we could do that with, and it would impress the natives. They would not be able to see inside the ship to see if it's all hollow or how many people or machines are inside of it, really. But the bigness of it and the fact that it can move fast and it can also move slow and hover for a long time without making a sound, and the fact that it blots out the sun when it comes over your city, these are things that kind of get your attention and make you think, well, hey, they can't be from around here. We got to listen to what they say.
Well, and it's a perfect opportunity, because if no one's read the Bible and no one's really read your book or listened to what you said or others, then it would be a perfect opportunity for these people to wake up. I mean, sorry, not to wake up, but they would be deceived to this, what's coming down.
Well, on that show images page, where it says UFOs, the alien card, and has a picture of that flying saucer with lightning coming out of it and all that stuff, click on that.
Let's see, lightning coming out of it. Let's see. Is that the
picture on top row?
I must be at the back. One more. Let's see. Okay, I see it here. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, go there.
Okay.
And now then, you'll see come up a bunch of images and videos. But the one that kind of explains what I'm talking about, how these force fields link together, the white circles show you how the circulating field can join these guys together with gravitational fields. But then the one that says lots of small craft linked together forming a huge, quote-unquote impossible craft, you know, the big super craft. And you could string a shell over these smaller craft and make it look like a bigger craft if you want. If you just play that little animation there, you'll see that I show quickly how a bunch of single craft link together with their fields to form a larger craft, which then forms another larger craft, then a big triangular craft, and it takes off. Now, it may take a while for it to load into your browser because it's a lengthy movie, but it does show these things to try to get the concept across using many smaller UFOs or flying saucers to group together to make one super craft that behaves as though it was just one big craft, even though it's made up of all the smaller craft hidden inside of a covering.
Well, I hope someone else saw that because my Windows Media Player encountered a problem while playing this file. I must be my Explorer, probably, Inner Explorer.
Ah.
But yes, I'll catch it later.
Yep. Okay, well, anyway, that shows you how you can make the bigger craft and how they will perform together as one. In essence, they could then drop some of those smaller craft out the bottom and let them be scout ships. And when they're actually part of the whole fabric that drives the big ship with anti-gravity technology, which is just spinning vortexual magnetic fields overlapping, you can create local gravity 30-foot diameter, and you can hook up a bunch of those in triangular formations, which is a natural formation for them, and put a superstructure over them, and you have the whole structure then flying with the effort of those individuals, which can leave the superstructure. And when they do, they, you know, one or two of them leave out of 100. It doesn't really affect the overall floating or power or speed ability of the big ship.
Yeah. Have you found out, you know, now that you've worked in, you know, with Daniel and finding this code, have you found anything more in depth or anything that's added to it?
Since I put it in the book, nothing that I'm ready to print yet, but one of the things that I did say in that translation I did find in the book was about the misquoted, misunderstood phrase, probably one of the hardest ones to translate in the book of Daniel, or the Bible for that matter, from the ancient Hebrew, because Daniel was a Chaldean, in the Chaldees of Babylon, the wealthy district, and he spoke the combined language there, which had a bit of Aramaic and Hebrew and some Sumerian words and Arabic words all mixed together in their dialect. But when I did translate that, this phrase was about he shall place himself above the God of gods, the desire of women, and every other god. And the translations have been trying to say, okay, he was queer or something. He was above the desire of women. But what they didn't understand was from Jewish history that the women of Israel, the Orthodox obviously, wanted to be the mother of the coming Messiah. Mm-hmm. That was the desire of the women of Israel. So when you read that phrase properly, connecting all kinds of things that are equal, like gods, you have, and he puts himself above the God of gods, the Elohim, mm-hmm. the desire of women, which is the Messiah, the Son of God, and all other gods. Do you see how it makes sense now?
Yeah, it does. Because, well, I guess what's sad is that we're not hearing this. And for you to bring this out, it just brings a, you know how it is when you look at a screen that's black and white? Well, that's how it looks. But you bring a color to it that's so much more depth to it. It gives a greater understanding of what we never seen before.
Well, you know, the Lord has, I'm sure, raised up people to translate various parts of Daniel in these latter-day times. And I don't know, I can't remember why, but suddenly I glommed onto that to translate it back in 2010. And I felt an urgency, I can't explain it, to find out what was in those eight verses. And when I did finally do it, it took 3 months in between, you know, life and business and everything to do it. You know, I was amazed, and as I would find a certain part of it and read it out to Holly, I'd say, listen to this, what this translates like. Boy, the hair in the back of your neck stands out, you know.
Yeah.
This is exciting stuff. I mean, you know, it should be shouted from the pulpits across the country, but they're not doing it. Anyway, I'm hoping to get more out of it, but the Lord inspired me at that time, like he's inspired others who have written various things from the book of Daniel for the latter days to wake people up.
And I understand, you know, there's been things in my life that, you know, you just felt so impressed to do it. And it wasn't so much with a book, but just other things. And you just felt like so impressed to do it. And you're like, wow, you look at the other side, and you're like, God, I didn't realize you were trying to really show me this. But now I see the understanding of it in a deeper meaning.
You know, yeah. And look, our pulpits, our preachers that have come out of the seminaries are so brainwashed in the wrong direction. Yet they're afraid to preach the truth of the word. They might lose something in the collection plate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sad. I mean, it's up to us, the lay person, to share, research and share these things with each other that want to know. That's why so many people are abandoning the church, because they're getting fed pablum instead of meat. You know, you want the meat of the word.
That's
important.
Yeah, that's why we actually got into a home group, just because of that. And actually, you know, God had given me three specific dreams to leave. And so it was pretty interesting just to it was, you know how it is when God speaks to you in those dreams, they're very concise, they're very accurate. And mine were three dreams consecutively. I'm like, I looked at my wife, I said, well, I think God's telling us to leave. And, well, it's been good the whole time.
Well, you know, that is true. You've got to follow the word when he gives it to you. Now, in your home study groups, you can translate this Hebrew with just a little bit of training. You don't have to have like 6 months or a year of training to learn how to translate the ancient Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
I got my first books were little pamphlets, self-teach, self-testing books from Behrman House, Behrman House. And I studied the Spanish pronunciation, which is the temple pronunciation of Hebrew, or Spanish, Sephardi accent. And I got the Sephardi self-teach books there for, I don't know, $12-$13 each. And in a week's time, I'd gone through the book recognizing and learning how to say the letters of the alphabet. And then it also started to teach you how to recognize phrases and words. You didn't go through conjugation or verbs, or there's a lot of very fine detail you can go into there if you want to. But to start translating, all you need is a book that is a Hebrew Chaldean lexicon. And I got the analytical Hebrew and Chaldean lexicon by, I'm just trying to remember his name, Johnson, I think, but anyway, I have to look it up and see. And with that, and the oldest forms you can find of the Hebrew Old Testament or the Tanakh, you can sit around in house groups. I did this with 12 families when I was down in Australia, and we started stuff like translating in detail, and it took us weeks to do it because we were slow, translating in detail the Exodus, what happened in the Reed Sea crossing, where did it occur. We got maps out. We got military maps, and we found out the names of places today even that are in those areas, and we were able to figure out where the real Mount Sinai is. And it's not in the Sinai Peninsula. It's in southwest Arabia where the Gulf of Aqaba is, down at the mouth of it there over on the Arabian side. You can't get there nowadays because they've locked it off, but Mount Sinai is there, and it tells you exactly how to get there in the Hebrew. And that's just one little thing. I mean, we learned about things like that the whole of Israel was covered in a huge, like, tornado that sat around them, and it descended hot, warm air on them, just like a real tornado does, but it didn't jump off of them. It stayed on them as they crossed as they sat by the Reed Sea and as they crossed it. And we went through it step by step, figuring out how the pressure changed, how the water curled up around it, according to Scripture, and how they could see the Egyptian soldiers, and the Egyptian soldiers could see them at night, but they couldn't touch each other. There was an invisible wall between them that wouldn't let them touch each other, and that's a spin in the outer wall of a tornado. Whether it was a craft or whether it was just God making it happen over that time, it doesn't matter. That's what it was. And it explains how the pressure coming down inside that pushed the water out and made dry land for them to walk across underneath that tornado that was covering that narrow section of the Reed Sea to deliver to the other side. Then it just dropped off of them, and behind them all the army of the Pharaoh, which had been coming up, got thrown up, you know, the waves as they closed, and threw them back up onto the Egyptian side, so they didn't even come over onto the Sinai Peninsula side. Just heavy stuff like that just makes it so real, you know?
No wonder why we look at an American-style Bible, and we don't even get that. We don't even see that in there.
No. You know, I must defend the English translation. If you were to truly translate in great detail the Old Testament and even the New Testament, the Old Testament, I know that the number's on, it would take at least 35 times the number of pages that a normal Bible has to start to show you the nuance of what they were saying in those days.
Oh, wow.
It's just when you do it, though, yourself and you see what you're missing, you just have such a great respect for the Jewish nation that has been holding this teaching, even though they haven't followed it properly. And they're going to come out. 144,000 Jewish witnesses are going to come loose if they're not already started now. When they accept Messiah, Yeshua as their Messiah, they are so armed to the teeth from birth with the knowledge of things we've not even read about yet to explain to people about God's plan and about salvation that it astounds me. I just, it's like 144,000 super duper Billy Graham evangelists out there all over the world with power, you know, to lay hands on all kinds of stuff. This is about to happen. So I'm excited. It's a time for these home Bible study groups to dig in and start reading and communicating with the Lord, because it is here. We're starting. This is it now.
Wow, that's exciting. You know, Stan, because, you know, it was funny. We went to Israel in 2007 with Perry Stone Ministries, and we were over there, and this is kind of funny, but, you know, you hear the word shalom. And you're like, hey, that's really cool, because, you know, I see some guy. He's, like, helping doing something, and I go, shalom. He looks at me and goes, hello. And I'm like, well, that was a downfall. I wanted to hear shalom back. But no, what I'm saying is that, you know, we lose the culture, you know, that affect what they have in their background. And, you know, we're so Americanized in things that we're so blinded to what God's trying to show us. And so when you come up with something like this and show these things, people don't believe it because they're like, well, I've never seen it before. Well, have you ever dug in to look at it and to see more of it than you ever seen before?
Yeah, you know, I was greatly blessed by the Lord to lead me to a teaching rabbi down in Australia that he outwardly he was not a messianic believer, but privately he was, and I didn't know it. And it took me 2 years to finally get to that point where he told me the truth about it. He even had a Hebrew New Testament that his father had given to him. So here's a rabbi that, you know, teaches people in the community, the Jewish community. And he was a teaching rabbi that actually wrote the Torah scrolls, the Pentateuch for the kind they have locked up in the closet there and they bring out every Shabbat. And so he was a scribe, they call him that, because he has to actually physically write with a pen, you know, a quill pen, the first five books of the Old Testament, and they have to be letter perfect. And so he was qualified to do that, plus he was a physicist. And so I got to tell you, the things that he and I discussed in you know, private room, there were two of us locked up, even their wives weren't allowed to hear, you know, when we're talking about that kind of stuff, it's forbidden. But boy, my eyes were really open to a lot of stuff. The coding in the Song of Moses, the decode verse where he spread his wings like an eagle over the house of Israel. You know, there's just tons of stuff that the Gentile world has not seen or heard and probably won't.
Well, you know, one of the things I found was really interesting, Perry Stone had brought out about the Jewish wedding and how there's so much into that and all the stuff that's done. That's really interesting in itself to look at that whole wedding.
You know, you're talking about the courtship and the wedding itself?
Yes.
Okay, I originally saw that in the Israeli Love Story, a book by Zola Levitt, where he detailed the traditional Jewish courtship and wedding and how it relates to the church as the bride and how there's a price paid for the bride and how she'll be taken away in the dead of night by not the bridegroom, but his friends who will get her from her house and take her to the wedding ceremony in the night, and people will know something is happening, but they won't know what or who. There's so much evidence for this. It's not just a modern invention, this ceremony. The betrothal of Isaac by Abraham to a bride in a foreign country. Abraham did not go, nor did he send Isaac, but Abraham sent his servant into that foreign land, like the earth, to find the bride. And the bride was found by finding one who would give him water and stuff, and it would be a good woman, a good wife to Isaac. And yeah, that's just like the rapture. You know, it's there. It is there, and it's been there for thousands of years in the writings. it's an exciting time in spite of all the frightening things that we see, but it is exciting to know that the Lord is real, and these things have been written down for us in the past to prove his authority.
Yeah. You know, years ago I had a little, you know, quick dream where I was in a church, and we're in there doing, people are doing the church in the building, and someone comes into the church, they yell out, they said, the Antichrist has been revealed. And right then and there, I'm amongst all these people, and a lot of them, they start all looking at me and laughing at me and going, they're laughing at me, blowing, yeah, you believe Jesus is going to come back. And all of a sudden, just right then and there, I was taken up and just gone. You know, it's just like, and these people had turned into like clowns. They were all mocking and laughing and stuff like, oh, you believe Jesus is going to come back. And boy, as soon as they were mocking and stuff, gone. Anyway,
may it be so. It be so, and soon.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, look, I couldn't agree more. I've had a couple of dreams like that, too. One was in a church. It was like a little country church, a stone built out of stone. And there were those of us in the bride that were there. In our clothing was all white robes and glowing. And what was really neat for us, Holly and I, was that I saw our doggies there. And they were coming with us, which was really quite unique. But it was the rapture. It was about to happen. And we were all getting charged up to be lifted up, I guess.
You know, and that brings remembrance. You know, we got two dogs ourselves, so we love our dogs. I know, with, of course, you and Holly love your dogs too.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're just like family. And but you know, one of the, this is another quick dream I had was I was laying in bed, and I remember the Holy Spirit speak to me, and He said, "I'm going to take you to a safe place." And I remember being taken out my window and then going up. But the one thing I noticed, though, when I looked down, everything I had knew, owned, was coming up with me. You know, it's not like it was just me, but it's like everything that made who I was coming too.
Ah, really?
So,
but, well, I'd like to have more water on my property if it's coming with me. Oh, you gotta laugh. You gotta laugh. Goodness gracious.
Well, you know, I don't know, Stan, you know, if this is our last time talking with everything that's going to be coming down. You know, I know that it's really important to, you know, talk about Yahshua and Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior, because I don't know. This could be our last time we talk. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Lord may make things last longer, and I don't know. Things can change.
You know, Barry, you're talking about being over in Israel. When I was there in 89, I'd been studying the Hebrew and was early in the game and was very proud of myself. I'd really boned up before we went over to be able to read signs, you know, street signs and stuff, and I had a book there that I was studying, Mansour's book on it, and had pictures and of Israel and Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and stores and streets there. I was showing one of my fellow students there. I said, look at this. You see this picture here? Now, this is down Main Street in I think it's Tel Aviv. It's got a sign out in front of this building, this food place. It's Beit Raish. Let's see, Beit Raish, Gimel, Burger King? Holy cow. So all that sweating and stuff to get this Hebrew name was Burger King in Hebrew. Oh, what a letdown.
You know, and this is like that guy saying hello. It's like, wait a second, I was expecting a little more enthusiasm, but he probably hears it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that really caught me by surprise over there was every morning at 5, you always hear that. The call to prayer, the Islamic call to prayer. And I had my MP3 player with me, and I stuck it out the window and recording the whole thing. And you know, we had gone to the Jewish museum out there, the Holocaust.
Oh yes, been there, yeah.
Yeah, and we had stopped the one in New York, and maybe also in Israel. And you know, just as soon as we got to the museum, it was like around 5 o'clock in the afternoon or so, and we're getting ready to go on the bus, and here comes the call, and these guys, they throw their mats down. It's like wherever you go, these guys are throwing mats down. How long is it before we see it in this country?
I don't know, but soon, I suspect. I know Israel's rather. I was surprised at 1 o'clock in the afternoon that they had siesta over there. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, in the outlying regions of Jerusalem, there they take siesta on Shabbat on Saturday,
I think I did. I do. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, and the elevators in Haifa. some of the better hotels, the elevators are all put on automatic, and they open at every floor and mm-hmm. just, you know, up and down automatically, so that you don't have to push a button on Shabbat.
Yeah, you don't have to do any work.
I mean, that's only on Shabbat, but I mean, yeah. But anyway, it's an interesting place, an interesting time. When I was there, it was in '89, as I say. At that time, you could still take a wrong turn, which I did, off of Main Street in Jerusalem, and end up in the Western, or in the Palestinian area, which I did one night. And fortunately, I found a guy in a hospital wagon, you know, like an emergency van, that I followed and stopped and asked him how to get back into non-Arab territory, because uh-huh. I was really, really at risk after night there. But it's an interesting place. An Arab sat up on the side of the cliffs up in the Jordan Valley, or like in the Dead Sea area, and took a shot at us from his camel and hit the dirt in front of the van way really? Down where we were. And I had an Arab that could have pushed me over a cliff with his camel. He was trying to sell me something that sneaked up behind me when I was over in the Jordanian wilderness looking over the valley there, just on a rock, you know, so big it was incredible. But I was trying to look over the edge of it down at a monastery down there. And I turned around, and here was this Arab that sneaked up behind me with his camel full of junk, and I hadn't even heard a thing. And he could have just breathed heavy, and I'd have been over the edge, you know. It's spooky. It's definitely spooky.
You know, talking about spooky, I heard that you were out some caves out there exploring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Dr. Jones, Dr. Vendel Jones. Vendy, nickname Vendy, like Indiana Jones. That was uh-huh. the original pattern or prototype, I think, for the series. But, yeah, he had a couple of caves he'd been exploring, one in particular down in the Dead Sea area, about 3 miles south of the Qumran digs. And it was called the Cave of the Rabbi's Hat. It's called the Cave of the Wadi HaKippah, because they had a hole in the top like the rabbis have their hat on their head, you know, because they're bald at the top.
To sure. Their head
warm. Well, it was empty, like it was a hole there. And he didn't go with me. I met with him in Arlington, because he was a family friend. And Dad took me over, and we talked about how I could get into that particular dig of his and see where the priests of Zadok had held their secret meetings when Jerusalem was under the control of the Romans.
Oh, wow.
And to get there, you know, you drive down and you see what wadi to look for. That's an old dry riverbed that comes up every now and then. And you get up there, and I had to find a secret rope that was hidden behind a rock that was connected to up inside the main cave so you could swing up, just like Indy Jones. You had to grab this rope, take a running start, and swing and pull yourself up into the cave. And then you had to be there between 11 and 1 during the day and watch the sun come through that hole in the top. And the sun, when it was directly overhead and just slightly either way, would light up a patch of sand in the bottom of the cave, about the middle of it. And that's where I was to go over and take a shovel and dig it down about a foot or so and find a metal plate that Dr. Jones had put there to hide another cave hidden underneath the entry to the cave where the priests of Zadok held their ceremonies. So I dug that off and lifted the lid off, and my friend and I went down there, and we had forgotten our flashlights and left them in Jerusalem, and so we were using matches and stuff to see where we were. So we climbed down this ladder that was against a wall, it seemed like, down in there, and we got to a small ledge that was only about as wide as our feet were long. So we had to put our back to the wall and inch along that thing in the dark, and then occasionally light a match so we didn't use them all. And about, I don't know, third or half of the way down, I felt something hit my shoulder and land on it, and it was warm and crawling down my arm. So we had climbing gloves on, so I couldn't see what it was, so I swatted at it. Bang, and knocked it off, and I heard it hit the deck down below me. I hit it, and it went 1, 2, thud. I thought, that's down there a ways. Whatever it was is gone, I hope.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether it was a spider or what, but anyway, he was ahead of me on the ledge, and so he got to a point where the ledge actually joined into a ramp that went, a dirt ramp, you could walk down into the next cave, into the room. And so we got down there, and he said, okay, there's a metal panel hiding this next room here. I'll let you go do that one. I said, okay. And it's a little space you had to really kneel down and crouch to get into it at all. So I had my Indiana Jones hat on and crawl down into this space, and it's just cramped. And I said, okay, now pull the metal plate while I'm in here because I can't do it from my angle here. So he pulls it out. And about that time, as I'm looking in there, I feel this warm thing on the top of my hat. I'm like, oh, crud, what is this? And so I said, put your match over here. So he does. I throw it off of my head, and it's a bat.
Oh.
It's just a bat, but that's okay. So then I light up my matches, and I put it up hand's length inside the room. And what appears is like this small room lined with nice big round river roll rocks from the Jordan up in the ceiling and on the walls. And it was gleaming in between them. The mortar was gleaming like diamonds, sparkling, and it was beautiful. And there was a point over there where there was soot on the ceiling, one of the side of it on the right side I was looking in. And that was where the priests of Zadok had you know, burned incense and candles and various ceremonies. And they had a pile of white stones and a pile of black stones, which balanced something in there. Because when Jonesy had been there before, he said he started taking some of the white stones off the stack, and the thing started to shake. And that day they went on down, that was Friday, and they went on down to the kibbutz Kalia down at the bottom of the hill where they were staying. And that night, it was Shabbat. And that night they were observing Shabbat down there, and there was an earthquake that shook and destroyed part of the room because of that. They had to go back in and tunnel it back in again. But they didn't move any more rocks. They put them all back into the stack and left it be.
Wow.
That's it was interesting, and he did find 300 pounds of the incense for the temple hidden there, the temple in Jerusalem, and I forget the Hebrew name for it now, but anyway, he did find that, and not the Ark of the Covenant or any of that kind of stuff. Although he and I talked about where it might be because we were retranslating the copper scrolls that are held in Jordan now. We had tracings that were made by the original discoverer of these copper scrolls at the Qumran and found a code in there, a very simple but archaic code that the generals used to use back in the Middle East. And you had to, you would carve letters into a cylinder type of shape of clay. Some letters would be deeper than others. And when you roll that cylinder over a strip of wet clay, it would spell out a message.
Mm-hmm.
But some letters were higher or lower than others, and some markings on it that looked like just random scratches were higher or lower than others. And when you did that with the copper scrolls, it showed a map of where the Ark of the Covenant would be hidden, down some steps and whatever. And it's not in the desert. It's in Jerusalem, there at the old site underneath where the temple used to be. Anyway, we've had fun. We've really had fun. Now, Dr. Jones died recently. He's gone on now. But we did have fun.
Well, you know, there was an archaeologist that I talked to about 2 months ago from down your way, and I need to have him on. But he was telling me that with the Dead Sea Scrolls, he said there's a find that's coming out this fall that's going to be even bigger than the Dead Sea Scrolls. So I don't know what that's all about, what that means, but I need to have him on. I know he can't divulge too much. I don't know what he's looking at, what stuff he needs to kind of hide for right now, but he said there's something major find that's coming out. Have you heard anything like that?
I don't know. Possibly something to do with Yeshua, with the Messiah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see what he says. All I've got is kind of rumor, and I don't trust rumor until I go investigate it. I know that things have got to come out very soon to shake people up a bit. We've got to see the two witnesses appear there too, and I think they will be real individuals, as it says. So let's wait and see. I'd be really keen to see what he's got to say.
Yeah, it's interesting that he mentioned it, so I don't know if it might have been just like, well, you know, this is really cool, or... You know, we'll see what happens.
I did see on the history, or I think it was a History Channel. It's one of them anyway. There's a naked archaeologist guy that is Jewish that makes, you know, light of various archaeological finds as he discusses them with you in Israel and the surrounding countries. And he was with a group there in a suburb of Jerusalem where they were about 200 feet from the gravesite, the the tomb that was down underneath the ground where they'd been building apartments. And this tomb had been sealed off because when it was originally opened, the claim was that that was the tomb where Jesus' bones lie. You know, these bones of Jesus, the Messiah that rose from the dead.
Oh, yeah.
And they excavated a 200-foot away. They excavated another tomb with a robotic arm underneath this guy's house. And I watched it as they looked at the various things and found that this was probably Joseph of Arimathea's private tomb. And the markings on the ossuary appeared to show that this was the earliest Christian symbols drawn on them. And they said, this therefore makes it very certain this must be Jesus' grave over here. Now, if you think about it, the Bible does say, and it gives a number of clues in the New Testament about being raised from the dead and about the corruptible must put on the incorruptible and about Jesus saying, don't touch me for I have not yet ascended.
Uh-huh.
It is possible, you know, in dream visions my wife has had, she said that she saw us being pulled out of our bodies in the rapture. The bodies were left behind.
Uh-huh.
So if you consider that, and if Jesus, if we're being raised in a like manner up as he was, then he must have left his mortal body behind when he was through with it and took his spiritual body up. So if they do find bones and say this is Jesus' bones, might well be, but it doesn't mean he didn't raise from the dead. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It makes totally sense then, because then our flesh itself could not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Are you familiar with Doug Hamp?
No, I don't think so.
Well, anyways, he's good friends with LA and such, but one of the things he's been finding out is that our DNA, when we sin, there's actually markings that are actually encrypted into our DNA. So like if they did a study on like people that would like maybe let's say steal or whatnot, their DNA would be marked. The only thing is that they never did a study on a person that would become born again to see if their DNA would change. The idea is though that if your DNA is been destroyed, but once you become a new creation in Christ, it changes. Maybe it might change your DNA. That being said, maybe this body here can't go up into heaven, but you would have to leave it here and then go up and your spirit and your soul would go up.
Well, look at what happened to the people in Hiroshima, for instance, or Nagasaki. A number of them were totally just blown to atoms all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And their DNA would probably not exist anymore, would it?
No.
Okay, so how would the Lord then notice them, get their record and whatever? It's because we have, in the parallel dimension to us, watching us, we have angels recording all of what we do and being sure that those that are in the Lord's care do not stumble and fall. So the electromagnetic images or whatever our real soul is made of, those things are preserved across the veil. It doesn't matter if you rise from where your atoms were scattered or where they were buried together in a grave. What comes up will be the model that they have in the parallel world.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that people who've lost a limb and have the ghost limb syndrome are feeling their ghost limb in the parallel world.
Oh, yes. I can understand that.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, it is. You know, if people could just get a grasp of the other side of things, it would sure make them look at things differently in this world.
Well, you know, there are a number of clues in the Old Testament that the older generations, you know, prior generations had trouble understanding. They just accepted it. But there are clues that tell you that when God appeared or God's angels appeared to man, when they came out of the sky, that they were attended by heat and lightning and great energy. And, you know, when Moses talked to God up on Mount Sinai, God says to him, look, or Moses says to God first, he says, look, we've been talking here and studying and everything. He says, what do you look like? Can I see your face instead of just the voice? So what does God do? He says, look, I'm going to hide you in the crack of this, in the crevice in this mountain, so you're not damaged by my rays and my presence, you know, the energy, because mm-hmm. it would destroy you. But I will cast my shadow up on this cloud so that you can see that, and that won't hurt you. Now, that's telling you there's great energy in the presence of God.
Yes.
Which is, you know, evident in the book of the Revelation, various other places in the Old Testament. The flaming chariot, okay, it came down, and Ezekiel got to see that. From the upper levels, from the concentric or parallel universe around us, up in the upper levels, or at least three levels to it, beings come to see us on various missions, whether good or bad. The lower level is inside the earth, and that will be opened up. There will be an angel that will open up a hole and let the demonic creatures out of there to afflict mankind during the judgments of the book of Revelation and John. So there are levels to existence. When the ghosts or spirits, try to appear in a room or do appear in a room and haunt somebody or scare somebody, the reliable reports have usually said they felt a chill in the air.
Yes.
And that's because in the lower energy density of the level beneath us, they are cold to us, but we are hot to them. And we are cold, by comparison temperature-wise, to the upper levels of God's kingdom in the parallel universe. There is so much out there left to understand and explore. I can't begin to tell you, but I'll tell you this. When we leave our bodies and get our hereafter, eternal bodies, our minds expand like gangbusters. You start to be able to understand how the whole universe works if you want. It's when I was nearly dead and went out there, I was amazed at what I was able to understand and what was shown to me. Because I wanted to know scientific things, how does a galaxy work? What makes it gravity and, dumb stuff like that. But I was shown and I knew it all. But when I squeezed back into my body and my body's brain, it was like a slipper that was too tight and things fell off the side. It's taking me a while to get some of it back in. But we are going to know and understand so much once we get our eternal bodies. It's just really encouraging.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to mention is, with the Lord in our life, those who know Jesus Christ, Yeshua in their life, one of the things I wanted to mention, Stan, is, and how he works, with my wife and I will be married in November, 10 years. And, one of the things that was really interesting was when we were dating, we weren't, we had been burnt and stuff like that. And one of the things that we had prayed, hey, God, you bring the right person along. And so that's what both of us had prayed, but never had met each other. And this is how, really God really had moved and works in people's lives was we're dating, and all of a sudden the Holy Spirit says to her one day, even before we're dating, the person you're going to marry is going to wash your feet. Son of a gun, Stan, if one day we're dating, we're dating like a month or two, I felt so impressed. I got to wash her feet. I don't know why. Got to wash her feet. And I said, hey, can I get a bowl of water and a washcloth? And all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit spoke to her and said, he's going to wash your feet. The reason why I said that is I want to encourage people out there that are listening that, when you know Jesus Christ, Yeshua, in your life, he does those things, Stan. Just like you talked about how the angel touched your back and how when you got saved, reading the Bible. And so many different things happen. That's why I want to encourage people out there that they can really rely on him to help them get through all these times.
It's another little coincidence, too. Holly and I came together by, the direction of the Lord as well. And now that we've started the ministry over here, in the States, which we started in Australia, but we really got active here, when we write out emails and stuff like that, one day I was writing out, an answer to somebody's email about the Bible, and they were believers, and I signed it Stan and Holly, as I normally do. And I looked at it, and I thought, gosh, if you take Stan and Holly, take a couple letters out, it says Stand Holy.
Oh, wow.
And it's just really amazing. So I think there's subtle little things like that that are clues to those of us the Lord touches our lives that he's still there and in charge of everything.
And just mentioning that, this new place we're going to, my wife was so impressed to look up a certain verse in Psalms. And it says in Psalms, and it's one verse, it says, the keeper of his property, something like that. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the Bible in front of me. But, yeah, Stan, God does those things. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I tell you what, we are to prepare to endure like the five wise virgins, and that means, food, water, supplies, scriptural studies, spiritual preparation as well. But understand that if all the preparations that we have made need to be thrown away or left in a heap as you run or go somewhere else, the Lord will provide. The Holy Spirit is like a computer-driven thing with power and provision for us, super mind, and it will know what we need, and we will get food and we will get healing wherever we are if we have to be here for a while before the rapture occurs. Mm-hmm. So that's an encouragement. We've had a number of people with dreams relating that to us. So I firmly believe that the Lord will take care of us wherever we are and what we need.
I know saying that. Oh, and I say, I think, you know, just talking about this will definitely encourage people out there, because I know that there is people that are very fearful. They don't want to deal with this stuff. But I know that, you know, he did not give us a spirit of fear, but a power of love and a sound mind. And we don't have to worry about those things.
Well, look, I mean, you can prepare for all kinds of things, as Holly's put in the book. Some of them are not necessarily preparing for judgments on the country or anything, but, you know, weather and the storms and earthquakes and, you know, all this kind of foreign invasion, nuclear war. You can prepare for some or all of that, depending upon your financial status. But in the end, the Lord wants you to do what you can and then let go and let God.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to find a verse here as we're talking. No, I think that if we try to take on too much and think that we're the only ones that can do it, we're fooling ourselves. I think we need to do the best, like you said, and then trust Him.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Holly has an example in the Dare to Prepare book where she's talking about a guy that's in, you know, in a floods up in Australia somewhere, you know, out in a flood zone, and he's on a little farm that's gradually being swallowed up by the flood, and you know, a boat comes by and says, no, I'm waiting on the Lord to save me. Okay. And a helicopter comes by and says, we can lift you off. No, I'm waiting on the Lord to save me. Well, hey, who do you think sent the boat and the helicopter? It doesn't have to be a flash of lightning and an angel doing it. The Lord moves what's here in, you know, in the manner he wishes to achieve the end result. So, you know, if it's your wife or future wife coming along, if it's a stranger on the road that helps you, you know, that's the Lord moving.
You know, one of the things that I was usually, my wife and I will read in the morning, then pray a little bit before we go to work and that. And one of the things that had come up, you know how God will just impress on you a verse out of the Bible, and it was out of Philippians 1:28. And basically, this is what really encouraged me. And it was said that, and there is no way, let's see, and are in no way, I'm sorry, I'm reading on a version I'm not used to, but basically it says, don't be intimidated by your opponents, for this will be a sign for their destruction, and for you, even yourself will be saved by God himself. And that's New Living Translation, I believe. But yeah, it's just, I think just going for it and just keep going and not back off, but just trust in him.
Yeah, look, there are a number of people that are in bad situations in hospital, old folks' homes that are Christian believers, and they must do the best they can. If they can't afford or they're not in a situation where they can get out of the cities, then they trust the Lord to provide what they need. Look, if the Lord can take Philip and transport him somewhere else, like Star Trek, anybody can be taken to be anywhere, whatever the Lord chooses. And it's not like the Lord is going to be favoring the United States any longer, because we are the modern Babylon, I think. And basically, I think Christians should pray for the protection of the good Lord through the Holy Spirit and through Yeshua to shield them against his judgments on this country, because it's going to fall on the whole country. And a lot of us, most of us, can't get out of the country, can't get out of Babylon per se, but we can get out of the system, which means preparing to go walk about or drive about or whatever when the time comes.
It's just amazing how this country has changed so much in 10 years.
Hey, I was out of the country for 30 years, and when I came back, I thought I was on another planet. Let me tell you, it's just big changes.
Really? Yeah, when we were kids in school, my mom was a nurse teacher, and so during the summer, they would take us traveling, and I've seen the whole Western United States, and I've seen places, and I, you know what, Stan? The one place that they always took us was to out there where you're at, Buena Vista, Colorado, and you know, it's a beautiful country out that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, that's just a side note. But you know, yeah, it's just amazing how this country has just changed so much. It's just unrecognizable anymore.
Well, and it's a sad thing. And you know, it was such a culture shock to me to come back after that time to see what I had left was so corrupted. But it's because people, you know, didn't stand up. Our preachers or pastors that were supposed to shepherd our sheep fell down on the job and did not keep them active, keeping the politics of our country on a straight and narrow. And people got greedy and lazy, and the government would give them things, so they voted things in like that. And it's just amazing how quickly that can bring a culture to a collapse.
Yeah.
We need to be taken down. we're very arrogant and consider ourselves above every other nation. And certainly we have had great talent here and entrepreneurial expertise. And between us and the Germans, I think we're the top inventors on the planet. But that's, and the Israelis. Oh, absolutely, the Israelis. But
yes.
Now then, of course, China's stealing all those things. They're just, when they come through a patent office, we file for patent, it goes straight to the Chinese desk and then out of the country. They've raped America for all they can. Israel is being clever with some of its stuff and keeping it in-house. But, you know, the world is going to be sad when we go. Yeah. They won't realize it. They hate us now because we're wealthy, and we got wealthy because of what we contributed. But we let that go to our heads and got lazy. And we were taken over by these fifth columnists that ruined our educational facilities and the seminaries and the normal universities and even schools now. And that's, we've let that happen, and we're destroyed now because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I had seen some newspaper clippings of giant finds and stuff like that. And, you know, do you think that the technology that we're having now, people in the 1800s and 1700s of America came across that stuff and hid it for themselves until this time?
I've heard reports of it. Certainly in the Native American tribes, they will tell you about the legends of the giant people. The Grand Canyon is apparently an area of great interest to a friend of mine, Clint Walker, that's writing a book on the giants of the Grand Canyon and about things they found in caves down there. I don't know if he's finished it yet or not, but there are mounds and various other artifacts in the New England states areas, as I recall, that do indicate the presence of another race that was not Indian that predated the American Indian. The American Indians may have actually come across the Bering Strait, many of them, and that's why they have high cheekbones and some Asian features. I don't know for sure, but yeah, there are places, I'm pretty sure that there are artifacts that have been sequestered away from the public because they would have to explain too much, and they didn't want to.
The Hopis, you know, that you speak of a lot, do they come from like a Christian background of somewhat?
They have met with Christian missionaries in the past, and I would say that when we were down there, about half of the tribes of the Hopi were Christian believers. And the other half were traditionalists, which were animists or like had spirit dolls, the Kachina and things like that. And there was a fair amount of friction in the tribes because of this. So some of the stuff that you hear from them is probably, you know, from the non-Christian side of things. And the other is from the Christian sources. And you have to kind of sort the wheat from the chaff with them. I know that certain things they've said I believe because I know they are coming from other stuff that the Lord has shown us about the Civil War within the United States and the destruction of this country by foreign forces eventually and how the great majority of the country will be destroyed for, you know, bio and nuclear and, you know, like germ warfare and stuff like that would have killed most of the country and its people. So I understand and believe what they say when they say that they were shown that the United States would suffer this great Civil War and invasion. And I also think that looking at the map and studying the geology of their area, that the logical land path for them after the waters rise will be up into the Four Corners where they told me that they were there to go after the Civil War is finished and the survivors of it come to the Hopi and the Navajo to go up into that, into the Four Corners area and up into the southern Colorado. There's a natural land bridge that forms when you put the water in there.
Well, I've always found it, you know, always felt a tendency of always being down in Colorado. I don't know if that'll happen now or that's just something that's just me. But, yeah, you know, with things happening like they are, I know Wyoming is gearing up for things. You hear a lot of people that are patriots that are saying it ain't going to happen on my watch. Well, it may happen, but they may take down some people. I don't know. But it's just sad that most people are just clueless what's going on. And
it is, but you know the government can make false flags. It can raise up terrorists, quote unquote, to trigger or spark civil riots, you know, like the Trayvon thing down in Florida. I mean, you can get that blown out of shape, and you can get like the Watts riots, but all across the country. And when that starts to happen, these good old boys with rifles, including myself, are probably going to say, "You're not going any further. Stay off my doorstep, and we'll defend ourselves." Some will be aggressive, And that's why they will declare from Washington martial law, which will be very difficult to enforce because of the breakdown of communication everywhere that will occur at the same time. I do understand why they're bringing in foreign troops, Germans and Norwegians and UN troops. And, you know, they're going to toss some of us that they can get a hold of into FEMA camps, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But there will be a lot that aren't caught and locked up. This civil war will be forced upon us probably because the rational people will say, well, we're not going to do this. It would create natural grounds for martial law and for throwing us in prison. But they'll do what they want to justify controlling the country, just like the Nazis did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that we only just got just a few minutes left. Stan, is there anything else that you have in your heart like to share?
Well, let's see. We didn't cover the radiation spills. Coming from Japan. This is going to be a bigger problem than I thought it would ever be. That floating mat of junk coming over this way with 20 million tons, Holly? Something like that. 25 million tons, that's right, of debris has been thrown off the coast of Japan, all radioactive, and it's heading our way, and some of it's already starting to show up in Alaska on the coast up there, motorbike they came
Harley Davidson, yeah. Yeah,
I've seen yeah, it. Yeah, what a waste. But anyway, it's come up, and the thing is moving a lot faster, this debris trail, than they'd forecast, and so the majority of it may hit us late next year, if not before, depending on the winds and the currents. Reactor number 4 over there is in trouble, and if it goes, it's going to blow a lot of new stuff into the air and into the water. The Japanese are secretly very worried about it, and there's been one Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon went over there and spent a day in radiation suits tramping around the reactors to see how bad the situation was. And he's come back with, hey, this is another time bomb waiting to go off over that reactor number 4. It's got the hottest inventory of radioactive fuel rods. And, of course, we're seeing all the earthquakes, still aftershocks and whatever, but occurring in that area. And what's left of reactor 4's infrastructure is really quite shaky. Yeah. Holly's just telling me if the ceiling collapses on it that there's a huge number, hundreds, maybe thousands of fuel rods that will fall down. 1,566 wow. Fuel rods, that's right. So, you know, if it ruptures and falls down, it's going to put a new surge of stuff in our direction, which, you know, a lot of it will be airborne. That's heavy on my mind. And heavy on my mind also is the threats by the Al-Qaeda, which mm-hmm. appeared as early as 2002, I think, in this country. Was it 2004? All right, 2004. Holly's correcting me here. But where they've threatened to burn our forest, to pollute our food system, and we've seen the fires last year with the drought hitting us now, there's going to be, you know, more stuff. And they had like a 6-point plan, which she's got up on the news site, which says a new Al-Qaeda plot to burn America. And it's almost like Dimitri Dudeman's thing, America will burn.
Yeah.
They plan to attack our oil refineries, which, of course, hits transport and fuel prices and pollutes the air, however they do it. And they want to hit civilian airports, not just in the air, but the airports. So all these things that they're planning to do, they're starting to do. And that's a worry for this year. And in Israel, you know, I mentioned this briefly, but some of the military generals there in Israel and the general population, it's not sure what percentage, but they think it's a majority, are unhappy with Netanyahu's desire to attack Iran before it gets its bomb developed. I don't know who to believe because I've got Jewish Chronicle over here in New York saying what I'm telling you, that the Prime Minister Netanyahu is they want to vote him out, and that there's going to be a fall election, an early election to do that. And then you've got Netanyahu saying, well, I think we better move right now. We can't wait till November like Obama asked me, because we've got to, you know, get rid of the nuclear bomb program that Iran's got going. So who do you believe? I mean, it's there's even indecision and bad reporting or something coming out of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
All this is just leading up to very traumatic end of this year.
Yeah, and there's probably other things out there we don't even heard of yet that we
right.
So yeah, it's just multiple things. I think that just being in crisis be the way to go because you don't know if you're going to go.
I know. Oh, Israel, you know, I think about that. They've called in six
I heard that.
Yeah, and they've got an interesting thing where everybody has to do military training once they reach the age of 18. They don't have to stay in the military, but they have to do the training. So they could potentially have as many as 3 million people they could put in the field, even though they only quote about 500,000 to 600,000 that they could put in the field. They've got another 16 battalions on standby that they can call up, and the Knesset gave approval to Netanyahu to do that now. So, you know, I tend to think that whether it's right or not, it's about to happen.
So it could be the Ezekiel 38 scenario happening here soon.
Yep, yep, yep. Russia's not going to sit there and let Iran get stomped on, so...
Well,
it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. Stan, I guess we should have touched on more on that, but it was great just talking to you with just a variance of different things.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of questions you're bringing up that folks have been talking to you about and you've been wondering about, so that's the reason that we leave it free form so we can get what's important out.
But we've been talking to Stan Dale. Now, definitely go to his website, standale.com. Definitely watch the news sites. You know, even if you send an email to Holly Dale saying thank you, because I really appreciate what Holly's doing. Stan, you know, thank you both for the work you've been doing.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.